Hello, world. Welcome to my show, Fight for Sound Life Coaching, on bbsradio.com. Thank you for being here. I invite you to listen in and call in. I am your host and your life coach, Janet Kaleri, sometimes known as Coach Kaleri. And as usual, I am very honored to have the opportunity to have this show. And because my mission in life is to ignite your potential. And it is my hope and intention that your potential is ignited and inspired through listening or calling into my show every other Tuesday at 2 p.m. PST, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I'd like to define what coaching is briefly for the new listeners. And coaching is a results-based, forward-moving, objective, confidential, non-judgmental, and fun process in which I ask you questions so that you come to the answers on your own. It is not therapy or counseling. It is a wonderful way for you to get to know yourself better, because when you know yourself better, your life works better. And right now, in these times, with all that is going on around us, I'm observing a lot of people coming from a place of fear, living in fear and anxiety. It's all around us. And working with the coach provides a solace to breathe. Breathing is good. And for self-compassion. And I'm going to talk a little bit about compassion right now. I think that if we were to switch gears and flip the switch and live from a place of compassion right now, not tomorrow or next week, but right now, that the results that we are seeing, the results that we are creating in the world and for ourselves would begin to change. Most people, if they are compassionate, they're compassionate for others. But often, they don't think about being compassionate to themselves. And self-compassion for me is to really allow myself to be human, to allow myself to be fallible, and look at things, look at choices I've made. And if I'm not happy with the choices I made or the results I see, I'm compassionate with myself. And then I make a different choice. There's no sense in beating yourself up. No sense in me beating myself up. It doesn't do us any good. It actually perpetuates fear. It perpetuates anxiety. So I am calling out a compassion campaign, and it's called Gut Compassion. Gut Compassion. Yep, do you have compassion? Do you have compassion for yourself? Ask that question. Am I compassionate with myself? Am I being compassionate with others? It's the compassion campaign. You stay tuned for more information, and you can email me at janet@sightforsound.com or call me at 323-252-0963, and you can find out more information on my BBS radio site, which is bbsradio.com/sightforsound. So the time is now to be compassionate with yourself. Start with yourself and be compassionate. And if you don't know how, you just give me a call. It's been a great practice for me for the last 7 or 8 years, a diligent practice of self-compassion. And it has brought me more joy in my life and more joy in others' lives. I could go on and on and tell you stories about that. So I am done being on my soapbox about compassion, and I would love to share with you why I'm very excited about my show today, because I have a very special guest, and her name is Sarah Culberson. She is a friend and a colleague of mine. She is an amazing woman, a dancer, an actress, a teacher, a philanthropist, and in the last few years has found out that she's an actual princess. She's been interviewed on CNN and ABC News and Oprah.com and Newsweek. Sarah is a light. If you know Sarah, if you don't know her, you want to. She is a light. She is the epitome of energy and light and compassion and possibility, unlimited possibility. And I'm really blessed to have her in my life. Today we're going to talk about Sarah and a commitment that she made a few years back when she was in my leadership circle. She made a specific commitment because she grew up in West Virginia and she is adopted. She made a commitment to find her father. And Sarah and I are here to share her story, share how she founded a foundation that is rebuilding schools in Bompé, Africa. And that's in the Sierra Leone area. So without further ado, I welcome you, Sarah Culberson. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me. What a beautiful welcome. My goodness. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking the time out to be here. I know your life has never been the same and has completely changed direction. And all because you made a commitment, and really because, not only because of the commitment you made, Sarah, but in that mindset and that attitude of ownership and accountability and claiming what is important to you. And I think that attitude, that mindset, has really helped you form and build the foundation. And I would love for you right now in this moment to share about the foundation, and then we'll talk about your story and how you found your father.
Sure. Well, I actually co-founded the foundation. John Worley actually founded the foundation with me, and we both created this based on our trip to Sierra Leone. And when we got there, we saw what happened after an 11-year civil war, and we realized that we couldn't come back to America and act like we didn't see something after we saw people who had had their hands cut off and had their houses set on fire and who had been through so much, and they were still so powerful and smiling and persevering. And but we knew we couldn't come back to America and just act like nothing happened. So, yeah.
What is the name of the foundation?
The name of the foundation is the Posowa Foundation. It's spelled with a K, K-P-O-S-O-W-A. It's my family's last name, and the K is silent, so it's pronounced Posowa.
Posowa.
Yeah.
Okay. That's wonderful. And, you know, when I was on my soapbox there on compassion, I forgot to call out the call-in numbers, which they are up on the website, but if we have people wanting to call in, 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227, or local 530-876-3222, 530-876-3222. Please do call in and share your thoughts or ask us questions. Well, so Sarah, a few years ago, you decided that you wanted to find your father,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that you hired a private investigator.
Yes.
Yeah!
I did. I hired a private investigator and, you know, went on a journey that I never even expected would, you know, I didn't even know if I'd find my father. I thought, well, let's just give it a try and see if we can find him, but he's probably in Africa and, you know, I don't even know if he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, inside of taking that journey and really taking that risk, because I was terrified, because I thought, what if he doesn't want to meet me? What if he doesn't want to talk to me? You know, what if he's not alive? You know, I didn't know what to expect. But I knew, the one thing I did know is that I just didn't want to be 60, 70, 80 years old someday and say, oh, you know what, it's too late. Like, I want to find him now, but now it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So I just jumped in and took a risk, which led me to Sierra Leone about 6 months later after starting the initial contacts.
Mm-hmm. And you always assumed he didn't want to.
I'm sorry?
You had always assumed that your father didn't want to.
Yeah, it's almost like I think, you know, I can't speak for all adopted children because everyone's different. My thoughts were, well, you know, they gave me up for adoption in the first place. They must not have wanted me, or maybe I did something wrong, or all these things that children make up and then grow up and kind of think that that's true. And I was so afraid of being rejected that I decided to kind of push finding him back. I'd found my birth mother's family and found out that she passed away of cancer when I would have been 11, but met many of her family members, and they're incredible. And then found out that I knew deep down that my father was still alive, but I just didn't know what to do or how to go about finding him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about adoption for the listeners on the radio show. Maybe some of them have been adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And all the thoughts and stories that go on in a person who is adopted, and the courage that it takes to, you know, be okay with it, and the courage that it takes to make that commitment to finding your real parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I can only obviously speak from my experience going on this journey to find my birth family. One of the things that I had to do to prepare myself is be ready for anything, like be ready for the worst. You know, I guess it's maybe a negative way to think about it, but I really had to be prepared that he may not want to talk to me, he may reject me, he may not be alive. You know, you never know, and I had to be prepared for anything. And I don't know how you really prepare yourself, but I just kind of went through all of it with myself and said, okay, you got to take a risk and step out there. And, you know, he did call, and the first thing he said was, please forgive me. I didn't know how to find you. And I asked him to please forgive me because I said, I've been making you wrong my entire life just to protect myself, and I'm not going to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of that, a whole opening happened, and I was able to get to know my father. And I didn't know if that was going to happen. I looked for my mother, and she was gone. She had passed away, and so that was something else I had to deal with. So when I think about this for adopted children, it's just allowing the process to unfold and not expecting anything, and also being very aware of your parents who raised you, because mm-hmm. they're such loving, beautiful people, and you want to also let them know that they're not going to be replaced, because that's something that I think is important for the parents to know, because sometimes they think, oh my goodness, my child is going to go off and have this whole new family.
Imagine.
And that can be scary for some parents, and having the adoptee think about that and just be aware so they can communicate with their parents. And, you know, it's sometimes it's a lot to take on and juggle, but just inside of communication, everything can be handled. You know?
I agree.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the communication had no blame, which is, you know, really important in this type of communication.
Yeah.
Is to, you know, you say allow things to unfold and be respectful of the adoptive parents and whatnot, and just step out there and be ready. And I think one of the important things is to, you know, to stay out of the blame game and actually be very compassionate with all the people involved, including
yes.
yourself.
Right, because one of the, exactly, because I think one of the things, I don't know, for me, I jumped and thought, well, he left, he wasn't there, what happened, was he just one of those dads who was like, oh, I had a kid, I'm out. You know, that's what I thought might be possible, but I really never knew the whole story. I didn't know what it was like to be an African man with a white woman in the 70s in West Virginia. I don't know what it's like to be a student here studying on a visa. You know, all of these things I don't know. I just kind of made up to kind of protect myself and kind of keep him at a distance. And when I just let that go and said, you know what, I don't know. I understand I've been angry and I've been hurt, but I need to just let that be and take a risk and try to find him. And inside of, like, kind of letting go of the anger, forgiving, inside of that, a whole new world was able to open up. And now I talked to him and he called today.
So what I'm hearing you talk about, for the listeners who may be adopted and want to find their birth parents, mm-hmm. or in general in life, but being willing to forgive yourself, forgive people involved, work through the anger, let it go, and really, I mean, I think that's part of the prep here is all of that. It's the forgiveness and feeling your feelings and letting go of them and not being a victim of them and being focused on what is really important to me. What am I committed to? What is really important? And am I willing to work through this anger and my stories and whatnot and move forward?
Yeah.
So those are some good questions for people to ask themselves.
Yeah. And not everybody maybe some people don't want to find their birth family, and that's fine too. Some people might not want to or feel the need to or be ready to. It's kind of whenever the person is ready. It's really whenever you're ready. It's not like there's a time frame, you know?
Yeah, it's not a have to.
No, not at all.
It is when the person is ready. For you personally, you didn't want to be 60 or 70 years old and then say, oh, I wish I met my birth parent.
Yeah, I just didn't want it to be too late.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, you know, a year from now could be too late. You never know what can happen. But you have to also be ready. And so it's not to do it just because you're worried that somebody may not be alive. You've got to do it when you're ready.
I agree with that one.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
If you're not ready, that's okay.
Right, right.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's very okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I would love to, I know your story, and I've seen it in magazines and on the TV, but I know your story personally because we are connected, and your story is so inspiring of that time that you went and you met your birth father, mm-hmm. and you found out you were a princess and many other things. So tell us about that story when you went to find your father, to see him.
Well, I think the most memorable part for me was when we arrived in the village. And there were we're riding on these bumpy roads from Freetown, the capital, to Bumpe, my family's village. And if you can imagine, there are these red clay dirt roads, this green, beautiful, brilliant green grass and bushy, bushy green trees. And we're driving along on these bumpy, bumpy roads for about a 5.5-hour drive from Freetown to Bumpe. And I call them Indiana Jones roads. They were after the Civil War, the rebels really did a job on the roads, and so many, many things had been destroyed. So it's kind of a journey to travel on these roads. But so we're traveling on these red clay dirt roads, and we're driving into the village, and we come up to a hill, and all of a sudden in the distance I see about 10, 15, then they're like 100, then there are about 250 people singing and dancing as we drive in. And my father that morning had given me this beautiful green African dress. And when we drove in, all the women of the village, everyone parted, and the women came forward wearing the same green dress that I had been given that morning. was incredible. It was incredible to be part of something, and I didn't even know anyone, but they had their arms out, and they were singing "We're Preparing for Sarah," and they were just totally, as far as an adopted child being welcomed like that, it was incredible. I couldn't have imagined something like this. And everyone gave me a big hug, and they were singing, and I started walking with the women, and my father was walking behind all of us, and then they took us up into a big circle underneath these beautiful trees, and the chief was standing there and said, our daughter has come home, and she can be chief here if she ever chooses to, which was a little bit overwhelming. I mean, okay, there's one thing to talk to my father on the phone or meet other family members, but to actually hear it, you know, proclaimed is just kind of like, whoa, wait a second. And so there are 36,000 people in my family's chiefdom, and my great-grandfather was a tribal chief, and my grandfather, and I am, you know, considered one of the daughters of the chiefs. And I believe people listening might go, wait a second, she's saying it wrong, but I think it's, believe it's called Mahaloi, which is the daughter of the king.
Uh-huh.
It's just really a beautiful opportunity and welcoming to be part of a family. And then as we're sitting there, my beautiful sister Jenaba comes walking up, and my brother Hendo Bay, and I just got to meet my half-brother and half-sister, and my father's wife, Mary, and the chief, and my Aunt Amy, and a whole new world opened up.
Mm.
A whole new world, a whole new adventure. I kept pinching myself thinking, is this really happening?
I'm sure it was quite surreal.
Really, I didn't think this was really happening. And it was a wonderful experience, and John was capturing all of it on film, and we got to, you know, meet some of the most beautiful people on earth who have been through some of the most tragic times and have come out just moving forward. And I'm inspired by them. Like, I'm learning from them constantly.
Mm-hmm. I have a photo of you here, and I think it's in Newsweek magazine of you in the green dress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. What I, you know, what keeps coming up for me is a sense of belonging, Sarah.
Yeah.
You know, and being adopted, maybe some people don't have a sense of belonging, or they do, but for those maybe who don't or didn't, and then to go visit your birth father, and, I mean, hundreds of people singing in these green gowns and, you know, what a sense of belonging.
Yeah. It was,
oh my goodness,
a little bit overwhelming and beautiful at the same time. I mean, really, 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 really beautiful. And you know, as I was there and the excitement started to die down, we saw the remnants of an 11-year civil war,
mm-hmm.
That had happened. And my father took me to Bumpe High School, where he's a principal, and I saw that the rebels used it as a barracks because it's a boarding school, and they had beds there, and children traveled from all over the country and other countries actually to come to this high school because it's a very prominent high school, and the rebels used it as a barracks. They slept there, and then they just set it on fire and ripped the roofs off. Now, this, of course, all happened. The war started many, many years before we got there.
Mm-hmm.
It went on for 11 years, and when we got there, it was 2 years after the war had ended. It ended in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that just, you know, my eyes were open. There's one thing to read about it or see something on the news, but to actually be there and see what happened, it's very different. It's very
yeah.
different. And I knew that I couldn't come back and say, gosh, I hope they work everything out. You know, it was kind of a kind of eye-opener and a way to kind of have me see, okay, what are you going to do here? What's your purpose? What, You found your father in Sierra Leone, West Africa, after moments of working with a private investigator, and you got here this easily. You know, there's a reason this happened.
Yes.
You know, that's how I feel. There's a reason this happened.
Sure.
And there's a huge opportunity here to be one of the people making a difference. And so many people are doing work in Sierra Leone.
And
I just get to be one of the ones to be part of it.
Yeah. And congratulations on taking ownership of that. Truly.
Thank you.
The ownership that this is my family, this is my village, this is my country. Congratulations. That's a huge, huge task that you took on. If anybody wants to call in and ask questions, share thoughts, you can even talk about anything, adoption, compassion, forgiveness, whatever you want to talk about. 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227. I know we have a lot of listeners today, Sarah, through your foundation, which we'll talk about in a second. You have hundreds, so I don't know, you might even have thousands of people on that email list. and I know that they were looking forward to this radio show. And so back to ownership and, you know, knowing that there was a reason for you being there, and you co-founded the SOA Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and that was a couple years ago.
Yep.
Where are we now? Yeah.
Yeah. It was September 2006. That's when it all began, and John jumped in and took it on like nobody's business. I was definitely overwhelmed by everything that had happened, and was thinking, how does this happen? How do we do this? Because there's so much need that sometimes it got really confronting. And even sometimes now, I mean, I'm being honest, sometimes it's thinking, oh, gosh, how do we do all this? What do we work on first? Okay, one, two, three, you know, and really taking one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really taking one thing at a time. And also, none of this, just I have to say this, none of this would be possible without everybody involved. I mean, my parents have been extraordinary supporters in all of this and have been there the whole way through. And they've done work internationally my entire life, so they were definitely people who taught me how to give and how to be generous, because they've done that my entire life and taught me, my sisters Lynn and Laura, our entire lives, and then friends who have just supported this foundation, Morgantown, Los Angeles, our board, everybody has made this happen, and everyone is making a difference for these kids. And these kids, I see them, I'm so inspired by who they are. Just recently did some interviews with some of the kids in Sierra Leone, and they were filmed, and they said, one little girl said, I want to be a minister. And another girl said, I want to be a designer. And another boy said, I want to be a lawyer. And everybody started to say what they want to be. And I really see that this education is a huge access for them to be what they want to be. It's the stepping stone to have this. And inside of them taking those things on, they actually can uplift their country. They're the future.
They are, and Bumpe High School went from burnt-out classrooms to 600 students in 12 new classrooms, a library, and dorms.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
It's really exciting what everybody has made happen. This has been a complete team effort, and people have just stepped up and donated money from different places all over the country and internationally to make a difference in this part of the world, which I think is incredible. And I also think that difference will impact the entire world. I think that there are things going on in so many places of the world, and it sometimes can get overwhelming. Where do I even begin? You know, sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, choosing one part and saying, okay, I'm going to take this on. And every, you know, penny makes a difference.
It does.
It really does.
And what I love about having these children and the high school kids involved is, well, one, it gives them hope, and they can actually see the results of this foundation, and they can see that anything is possible. But for me, what I like is that it gives them purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that's so important for kids to, you know, to have a purpose and to feel like they are contributing.
Yeah.
Even from a very young age.
You know, and what I would love to say about that is there actually, one of the things that's been so inspiring about all this is that there are a lot of groups of kids across the country who have done projects. I know there's a school in Cheat Lake in West Virginia. They took on reading books. So the elementary school children took on reading books. They got a company to sponsor them, 25 cents a book, and they read enough books and raised $500. So inside of their education and reading books, they raised money to send over to impact these students in Sierra Leone, which will impact their education.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is so beautiful is how can just the connection of young people to young people and adults to adults, like how can everyone be connected? There are so many different ways to do that. And I think I'm so inspired by these kids and some other kids took on jobs raking leaves at another middle school and got money for that and said, these are for these kids in Africa. So they get to be part of something, you know, just like you were saying.
I know. And I love the story, that girl, Jade, who has this fundraiser called Totes for Teens.
Yeah, yeah. Jade Iving did a huge fundraiser for the foundation. And she's a teenager and wants to take tote bags to the students in Sierra Leone.
And filled with supplies.
Yeah, full of supplies, pens, papers, lotions, and have them design the bags themselves and have their imprint on them. So when they get it, they have their own space. They have their own bag filled with whatever they want. And I just think that's going to be incredible for these kids. And it's a way for, you know, teenagers here to connect with teenagers in Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
So, what it's all about, all of us working together.
Yeah, if there are any people out there who would like to help in any way, you've heard of some of the ideas, the readathons, the bake sales, the raking leaves, and you can contact Sarah at the... It's the email is bumpenya@gmail.com. bumpenya@gmail.com. It's on my website as well. And, or you can go to the bumpafund.org and you can, find out more information on how you can contribute in whatever way, whatever fashion you see fit. But so this woman here, that's this girl, Jade, who started this Totes for Teens, she's here in Los Angeles, correct?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay,
she's in Los Angeles.
So just putting that out there that one can be anywhere in the world and raise money.
Yeah, and anybody can make a difference with an idea, you know, just an idea. And we're also looking at doing a big fundraiser here in Los Angeles in November and figuring out what that looks like as well to keep some of these projects going and create sustainability opportunities for a lot of the people in Sierra Leone, because one out of every eight mothers dies in childbirth in Sierra Leone. It's the highest infant and maternal mortality rate in the world.
Oh, my gosh. One out of eight.
One out of eight. So keeping a young girl in school, I mean, the school is co-ed. It's boys and girls. But keeping a young girl in school can actually save her life. Because usually if they can stay in school for up to 7 years, they'll get married later and have less children. And they actually can educate their children, and they also won't die inside of childbirth. So it's kind of a miracle what education can do. And
so say that again. I would love for you to repeat that.
Sure.
About the importance of education in regards to one out of eight women dying in childbirth.
Well, I was saying that one out of every eight women dies in childbirth. So if a girl stays in school, she's less likely to get pregnant because she's getting her education. So most girls, the statistics say they stay in school for up to 7 years. They'll get married 3 to 4 years later and have 3 to 4 less children. And that will actually, that the education can actually save their lives.
Yeah.
So,
amen.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a huge part of all of this. So we're working on a lot of different avenues to help students stay in school, not only provide the skeleton, the outside of the school, but actually provide scholarships and so on for the kids to stay in school. And we're also looking at sustainable economic opportunities for the community to help as well. So that's what's happening, and it's a whole new world. And we're all learning here. But it's happening, and we've been successful and had wonderful, beautiful people supporting all of this to make it happen.
Well, I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the idea that there are people, and I've been one of them, or maybe I still am one of them, who is afraid to commit to something that seems so big and so overwhelming, and then go right into the how am I going to do it, how, all that stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's just default curriculum in the head for most of us.
Right.
And, oh, my God, it's just, so, you know, Sarah, you got the chills. Like, there was a moment where you knew there was something for you to do. There was a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know how. You had no idea how. You were just getting acclimated to your birth family and finding out that you were a princess. And but you made the commitment. Like, whether you declared it out loud or declared it inside of yourself or both, you made the commitment. And I'm speaking to this, folks, about this commitment and this taking ownership and claiming something that is so important to you, that you are so passionate about. And when you commit to something that seems so big and so overwhelming, you are going to be supported. Okay, Sarah did not know how to do this. She had no clue of anything. She really didn't have much knowledge. She, you know, you had 1,000 questions, but you did it. And you just spoke about how many amazing, beautiful, supportive people you have now around you, supporting you and keeping the foundation going.
Yeah, because it's their, you know, it really is their foundation as well. It's all of our foundations, and really they're the ones who have really stepped in. It's like you said, it's making a commitment, and believe me, I didn't for a long time. I mean, I'm going to be honest. The beginning, I was like, I don't know how to do this. I don't want to do this. And I had many, many conversations with family, friends, and talking with John. And it's like, you know, it got to the point where it became apparent that this is what needs to happen. And it's also, this is what's important. And because the fear of not knowing how it's going to happen can get really overwhelming and scary. And I guess what I've learned through all this is you don't have to know exactly how it's all going to happen. That wonderful people show up and have a vision of their own that they take on inside of this. And you get to all work together. That's what I think is so beautiful. And to be part of a group moving toward a goal. And it's so important to remember that we're not alone. Because sometimes it feels like we are.
I know.
You know, and it really does, no matter what you're talking about, any aspect of life. But, yeah.
That's the creation process.
Yeah.
Of anything, whether it's big or small, whatever you judge it. That's the creation process, folks. Committing to it. You know, putting 2 feet in and just, you know, claiming that I'm committed to this. And it is amazing who and what shows up for you. The how shows up for you. I promise. And it's a good reminder for myself, but I promise that the how shows up.
Yeah.
It does, Sarah, right?
It really does. It really does. And it's exciting, and it might not be how you think it's going to show up.
Yes. You know, be open to how things show up. One of my magic sayings, be open to how things show up.
Yeah.
And I imagine that taking all of this on, that you go through cycles of certain challenges. One, I would think, would be like a sense of balance in your life.
Oh, yeah.
And I bring it up just, you know, on a realistic plane here, that when I take on something, when I take on a big game, when I take on a project, it's likely I'll go through cycles of imbalance. So I wanted to speak to that, Sarah, just because I want people to know that it's not going to be perfect, and it does take a renewed sense of commitment. Like, there's a cycle of renewing your sense of commitment and your intention. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think I totally agree with you. It does. It takes a sense of commitment, and also allowing yourself to fail and make mistakes. Like, I've made mistakes. I've failed in certain things that I thought would happen and didn't, and you know, there are all kinds of things that have worked, things that haven't worked, and it's inside of taking on something and taking a risk and trusting yourself and trusting others to give input and allowing that to come in, really allowing contribution in makes a huge difference. And that's what I've been learning. I'm constantly learning. I'm far from perfect, not even close, and I'm constantly learning about what's best, how do we do this, working with groups of people and learning. And being easy with ourselves sometimes. Like, sometimes we're hard on ourselves, sometimes I'm hard on myself,
mm-hmm.
and hard on others. Oh, it should be this way, or, you know, and just allowing everybody to be who they are, allowing me to be who I am, and all of us looking toward the bigger picture, which is these children and what can happen over there for them, out of us stepping into our fears and into the unknown in some areas, and taking a risk, which can cause miracles. That's what I think. So it's
yeah,
worth it.
Yeah, risks cause miracles. Well, I just want to repeat what I heard you say, because I think it's very important, is allowing yourself to receive.
Yes.
Yeah. Really, yeah. I mean, I'm speaking for myself too.
Yeah.
But really, allowing myself to receive is definitely a very important segment to creating anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, creating an art piece, creating a foundation. So I just wanted to speak to that real quick and just remind people, allow yourselves to receive. So let's see. You've got a book coming out, Sarah.
Yes, I do. It comes out May 2009. Kind of telling this whole journey through adoption, acceptance, forgiveness, you know, my incredible family who raised me, and up to meeting my father in Africa and what that was like, and hearing about his life and what it was like for the lives of the people going through a civil war. And until we meet and what that looks like, writing the book has been a journey within itself. My writing partner, who's brilliant, Tracy Trivis, and I thought, you know, oh, we're going to write the book and work together, blah, blah, blah. And it was a lot. It brought up a lot of things that we weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships, learning, many things from my past that I kind of tucked away and thought, you know, whatever. And then you write about them, it's like, oh, everything comes up.
Uh-huh.
So, but it's good. It's a learning process, and really, hoping that this book provides something for everyone who reads it, being adopted, not adopted, having a father, being biracial, forgiveness, West Africa, history, what happened to the people, what people went through, the perseverance of these gorgeous, amazing people, and what we can do just being one person, what we could all do to make a difference. So,
I look forward to buying it.
Yeah, thank you.
May 2009.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, that's good. Are you going to sell it as an e-book as well?
I have no idea how it's all going to work. I'm learning. That's something I'm learning about too. I don't know if it's going to be an e-book. I'm not sure. I've got to check with the publishing company.
So what's going on in Bumpei these days? What does it look like there? What's the energy like?
Well, it's beautiful. School just started yesterday. And as you were saying before, 600 students, which has not happened since before the war. So really, it hasn't happened since before 1991. Has the school been at full capacity? So this year, the school is at full capacity, and students are coming from all over, coming all the way from Freetown, which is, you know, I told you that 5.5-hour bumpy ride I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Students are traveling from all over to go to the school now, and the teachers are incredible, and it's moving forward, and it's exciting. It's really exciting, and everyone's uplifted, and they're sharing about what their dreams are and what they want to do, and a friend was there recently and videotaped them, and they're really looking toward the future. What do I want to be? What are my dreams? So we're looking at doing an art project with them as well to create those dreams on paper.
Aww.
And putting those into existence, because they haven't had an art class in 2 years because they couldn't afford an art teacher, and the art teacher went back to school. So it'd be a wonderful way for them to express themselves through art as well.
Yeah, the art programs are really important.
Yeah.
In the schools.
Yeah.
And so the art the classes have not started yet?
No, it's something that we've been talking about. Jade, actually, that I was telling you about, it's something that she thought about, doing an art project for the kids to have an opportunity to have art and also, you know, have an opportunity to do the art project and also be able to maybe design something that might be able to go in one of these tote bags.
Oh.
So that's what the, that's how the art can be displayed for them to see forever.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So it's exciting.
So 600 students started yesterday.
Yeah.
And your dad, is he still the principal?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's still the principal. So everything's moving along.
Yeah.
What did you say?
His name is Joseph.
Joseph.
Your dad.
Yes. That Joseph
so
Konia
wonderful.
Pessoa.
Joseph Konia Pessoa.
Yes.
What else is in the works with your foundation? You say you've got probably a fundraiser coming up.
Yeah, we're
in November.
Creating a fundraiser in November. That date's going to get solidified soon. And also we are, you know, we're working on getting scholarships to some of the kids, because a lot of kids drop out at a certain point if their parents can't pay school fees. So that's something that people could go online and donate to. Information's online. So projects, we're moving forward with that project. Also looking at having clean water. We're working with Rotary and Rotary International to get some clean water and wells in Sierra Leone. So my dad, Jim Culberson, who raised me, is working with my father, Joseph Konia Pessoa, my birth father, to get wells moving. They've been emailing each other back and forth, so that's been really exciting when the email's working in Sierra Leone, of course.
Yeah.
But so getting clean water to Sierra Leone is another big issue, because a lot of people die of simple diseases, waterborne diseases. So that's part of the process as well. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah. It's exciting. We're taking on all these new things, and it's exciting, and we're learning, and really the people in Bompe and Sierra Leone are teaching us. So that's great.
What a collaboration. If anyone would like to call in, share your thoughts, or ask questions, 877-876-5227 or 530-876-3222, 877-876-5227. So, Sarah, we have 5 minutes left.
Okay.
And is there anything that you would specifically like to note, to talk about, to share?
I think the first thing that comes to my head is that sometimes people, I know I was one of these people, we sometimes think, oh, what can I do? What difference can I make? You know, $5 makes a difference. $10 makes a difference. $100 makes a difference. Anything. People have collected pens and papers and notebooks and mailed them to Sierra Leone for students. People have collected books. You know, anything, anybody can be part of making a difference for others. And I just want to leave people with that and say that to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I'm from Boston, and when I was back there, one of my family friends. Okay. All right. I didn't hear the beep. Hello, caller.
This is Cornelia again. How are you?
Hi, Cornelia.
Hi. I called you earlier. I did get the voice on the internet, so I was listening. Sarah, this is Cornelia, the crazy lady that called you a couple of years ago that was looking for the African princess for her granddaughter.
Oh, yes. You are hardly crazy, Cornelia. I think it's... So how are you?
My heart just jumped when you said you were writing a book, because what did we talk about?
You emailed and said, I think you should write a book.
That's right. Yes, I am so pleased to hear that. And you also have to do one for the little girls, too.
Oh, I know.
Tell them they got to work it out. Make it a package. Make it a package. We need them. How are you doing? You sound wonderful.
I'm doing really, really great.
And I'm keeping up. I peep every now and then, so I know what's going on the website.
Great. People like you are the ones who keep it going, so thank you so much.
Yeah, whenever you send me something, I do my mass email. So prayerfully, you're getting some feedback from that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
They don't tell me, so I don't know. Hopefully. I just wanted to give you a yell when I heard the book. I'm at work, as I mentioned earlier, to your hostess, and I'm not supposed to be doing this, but I had to say, oh, she's doing the book. I had to let you know I heard you.
Oh, thank you
it's
so much.
Good well. Hearing you, and keep it up. Please keep it up.
I
My
will.
Airy turned
will.
3 years old in August.
Oh.
And so she'll be just about right when that book comes out for the little ones, right?
Okay, all right. You're holding me to it. This is the book
I'm
that's been written is an adult one, but we've got to get one for little kids, too.
They
I got
can
you.
Work a package out. They can break that down for little ones, too.
You're exactly right.
Great idea, Cornelia.
Thank you so much.
What do you do?
Have a blessed day.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Bye.
Cornelia.
Oh, she's so wonderful.
It sounds like there's another project on the line for you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, well, thanks for calling in, Cornelia. She seems extremely inspired by what you're doing, Sarah.
That's exciting.
And so she had searched African princess and found you.
Yeah.
Wow.
She told me she was looking for something for her granddaughter, I believe, to talk about princesses or something like that. So anyway, yeah, she had emailed about 2 years ago, and then she called one day, maybe a year ago, and I spoke to her, and she was just so uplifting. It was kind of one of those days when I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how do I do this? I'm stressed, or whatever. Just one of those human days that we all have, and she was just a light, and lit me up, and I got really excited about and kept moving forward. So she's really wonderful. Really
wonderful. Well, you all can find out more information about the POSOA Foundation at www.bumpefund.org. That's B-U-M-P-E fund, F-U-N-D.org. Or you can email bumpenya@gmail.com, bumpenya@gmail.com. I have Sarah Culberson as my guest on the show. Co-founder of the POSOA Foundation, and a girl who was adopted and found her birth father in Bompe, Sierra Leone, Africa. and has found out she's a princess, has become a philanthropist, and is writing a book, which will be out May 2009. Mm-hmm. And if you want any more information, you can also contact me at janet@sightsforsound.com or come on to the website bbsradio.com/sightsforsound. And remember, I got the compassion campaign starting, askyourself.compassion. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so inspired.
Thank you. Well, you're inspiring, too. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And Don and Seth, our radio producers at BBS Radio, thank you for the opportunity. And until next time, October 7th, I have Christy Earnshaw, credit coach and founder of Harmony and Home. Be well, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.